Welcome in. It's SB Pod. Stanford Steve is here. How are you, buddy?
Good. How are you, bud?
I'm all right. We got some sports.
A lot of things going on.
I mean, my gosh. Thankfully, the sports part's good. The other stuff is the other stuff. You know, the Gruden news on Monday night was, once you saw the emails that came out from the New York Times, you knew what was inevitable, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, I felt like Mark Davis was going to try to talk around or talk himself into some kind of way that they could have kept him if the Demora Smith racist trope was the only thing. I don't know that they could have, but I think he would have tried, because there seemed to be some maybe tepid support from the Oakland team, and Davis clearly loved Gruden. But when it's, you know, across the board, it's misogynistic, it's homophobic, it's, you know, it's every single thing you could say that would have offended somebody, and then theoretically everybody, just with language and thoughts, they're just like, what are we doing? It was clear he was going to go. And he did on Monday pretty quickly. And what happened, I think, also pretty quickly, Steve, is that two things seemed to happen. Number one, Monday, you knew John Gruden is not going to survive this. Number two, people started asking, wait a minute, this was an investigation into who? Not John Gruden, who worked at ESPN at the time, not the Raiders. It was an investigation in the Washington football team. And it's like, wait, so there's 650,000 emails, and the ones that are getting leaked are costing an employee of another team his job. What's going on with the other stuff? You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like that's the conversation that I'm hearing. I don't know, the day after, and the attorneys for the 40 former Washington football team employees are basically saying that, like, so the only person that lost their job as a result of your investigation into Washington is the coach of another team. You know what I mean? Like, that feels like that's the direction the conversation's going.
Can't really connect the dots, or at least the way they're handling things, it doesn't feel like it. To me, I think about the guys in the Raiders locker room. You know, everybody's asking for, you know, what they think about it, or when are we going to hear from them? Like, can we give those guys 24 hours to process this? Like, they obviously have to meet as a team and figure out a plan. They're in the middle of a season. And I just, from the media aspect, it's like, oh, when are the players going to talk? They usually talk on Wednesdays. Why don't they talk on Tuesdays? Like, they got to come up with a plan. Can we give them some time here? You know, they're the ones going out on the field that are going to take the brunt of this. They're going to want to have to answer all the questions. Let's give them a little time. Everybody loves to prep when they get asked questions, right? Can we let those guys prep a little bit?
That's you know what? I honestly hadn't even really thought about that. And I say I'm embarrassed, but as you say it out loud, I think it's unreasonable. Yeah. When we had Paul Gutierrez on Monday, who does such a good job covering the Raiders, I say that every time we talk to him. I'm like, that guy he's got a great way of delivering the information in a way that is consumable. He's excellent. Young people in this business, watch how he does his job. He's great at it.
You're going to see enough of him this week.
Yeah. But I mean, his point was, I reached out to some players and I hadn't heard back. I bet you haven't. I mean, you play for the team. This guy's your coach the day before you lose. You're 3-0 2 weeks ago. Now you're 3-2. You lose at home to the Bears. And, you know, some players are being asked, like, to answer for things that their coach said. And I don't think they knew on Sunday that the extent of the people that Gruden had said offensive things about. It's just, you're right about it's there's as is often the case, there's layers to this. Just the team has to play again after losing two games. They played Denver this Sunday, a divisional opponent. Yeah. Broncos in the same boat. They started 3-0. They've lost 2 in a row. But it's, they're trying to process doing their job. There's a guy that I assume they liked a lot. I mean, the Gruden, the caricature of Gruden, right? Football guy and all of that was appealing to football players. The Gruden that reveals itself through these emails and the level of comfort with which he uses this language with the guy running an NFL team, that's the part that I think rightfully leads people to say, well, you know, culture, how pervasive is this in the NFL? And I don't think it's specific to the NFL. I just think in general, Steve, that when people talk about, oh, it was 2011 or it was a private email, I think societally we have evolved over a decade. There are things that we, in jokes or in jest or comedians, topics that people would cover that they were comfortable with that seemed funny that now aren't, or things that are said under the guise of, oh, it was just a joke. But this wasn't a joke. Like, these weren't jokes. These aren't things that this is how he talks. And this is how he talked about women. It's how he talked about homosexuals. It's how he talked about D'Amore Smith. I mean, it's just across the line. And so do people have conversations offline that are different than they are online? I think everyone does. But in this case, it was the level of comfort in talking this way about all of these different people that, and so casually and comfortably, that you're like, wow, like this isn't a joke. This is just, you're revealing what you think about stuff. And there's going to be a cost associated with that and Gruden paid with his job. It's just the next level to it is, well, wait, there's all these emails. These are the ones that got leaked. That's an interesting, it's an interesting development. And what other ones are there to come? Then you got Kyrie. He's not going to play. Huh? How about that? He's reading The Athletic. He wants to be a voice for the voiceless. I don't understand. I don't know what the next level to that is. I don't know what, is he going to play? Is he going to get a shot? Who knows? I don't know.
That's a wait and see.
Well said there. So there's all this stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, sports are awesome. Saturday was so good.
Oh,
Sunday was incredible. Sunday was nuts. The Cleveland LA Charger game was nuts. The Monday Bengals. Night game. The
Bengals. Yeah.
Mason Crosby missed 3 field goals from 2 minutes into overtime. And then he bangs one home from 40-something yards, which was I love the fact that everybody on Green Bay had, they're like, oh, he's going to make it. And then he did. He's had terrible games before, and he comes back. Like, remember he had a horrible game against, like, Detroit, and the very next week he was great. But the Saturday was bananas from the Texas-Oklahoma game to – I don't – just the whole way through. Of all the things, what do you want to talk about first?
The Oklahoma quarterback situation.
That's interesting.
I think it's absolutely fascinating to see what happens there. Lincoln Riley says he's not naming a starter yet this week. But Scott, everybody made a big deal, and everybody knew who the two biggest names were in the NIL. And then Saban made his comments about Bryce Young, right? You look at Stingley down at LSU, and we look at Spencer Rattler. And if you go on The Athletic, there's an article from the beginning of the season when Rattler goes to the first day of NIL and takes a plane, I think, up to Chicago, signs a deal, and just talking about the money. And I start to wonder, how long are these deals worth? Because it can't be good pub if you're pushing a company and you went from Heisman frontrunner to getting benched. And the other one with Stingley, like, you know, I don't see him playing another game for LSU. And you talk about the hype he had.
Because he got injured.
That's
allegedly.
What that's
maybe.
What they
say. Oh, you're people listening, you see Steve's reaction. It's like, well, I mean, look, that LSU thing's going off the rails, which in a fascinating way. I mean, you look at LSU's schedule and it's like, wow, is that Ogeron really going to go from we won a title to they run him? Look at their schedule. It could happen. But the Rattler thing has a secondary layer, because it's not just that he got a bunch of dough and then gets benched. It's that this guy who we know well because he's from around here, you never saw him play. Well, you saw some of the tape. They didn't have a high school season last year, but Caleb Williams played against Zag in D.C., 5-star, superstar, got the goods. And we're talking on Tuesday, Lincoln Riley said, we'll see what the quarterback situation is. We saw what the quarterback situation is, Lincoln. Caleb Williams is your guy. Now, it's tricky because Rattler, and he's a young man. I don't know him. I'll just say that the conversation I've heard about him is that there's a lot in terms of sort of maybe believing you're a star before you've really shown it. Mm-hmm. Is that, am I being fair? I mean, I want to be fair to a young man. I don't know.
I mean, if you're going to go with social media, he's a rock star.
Okay. Well,
you know,
yeah. Okay.
He's first one of the kind.
But to your point, you get this NIL deal. Well, then you got to go play. You got to go deliver. Well, Caleb Williams went out when he got a chance and delivered. So how does Rattler handle all that? I don't know. Oklahoma hasn't been pretty, but man, they keep figuring out ways to win games, which is the only thing that ultimately matters in college football. So that is something to monitor. It seems like Caleb Williams is the guy. I mean, they were chanting for him. They wanted him early in Norman.
They got him. Game.
Yeah, they got him against Texas and Dallas. What an insane football game that was. Speaking of Bryce Young at Alabama, they go down to College Station and take a loss. They've lost games. Doesn't happen much. It hadn't happened in 100 games to an unranked opponent. A little unfair. I mean, they were unranked, A&M was, but they're not like, all due respect, it's not like Vanderbilt. A little different unranked. They had been ranked. Losing's one thing. They got bodied in ways you don't see Bama get bodied much. And that's what impressed me from the A&M perspective. And there's something to talk about that happened before that game. But that Saturday night in College Station, they looked the part.
A&M was a better football team.
I agree.
Both line scrimmages, the two running backs put together. I mean, I still don't think they got to 100 yards. But the plays Calzada made and the look of him Saturday night compared to the 3 weeks prior, it was like a different person was wearing that number for them.
And good for him. I couldn't have been happier because those Aggie fans that are passionate, man, they had enough. He wasn't the guy. And he was a baller on Saturday night. Got hurt, came back out there. He led. Like for a young man at that level to lead on that stage against that team, that was impressive as hell.
No doubt about it. And, you know, I've there's people out there that says it really doesn't mean anything because Alabama's not going to lose again. And
probably not.
You know, so I still think balance-wise, Bama's at the top for me. I want to see Georgia's offense. I guess the quarterback deal is holding them back, but I don't think there's any doubt right now. You have to play Bennett. I mean, he's been totally fine. You got to wait till Daniels is fully healthy. There's no reason to put him in. You know, you're not going to get any threat till maybe the Florida game. I mean, you're playing an undefeated team this week and you're 23.5 point favorite.
That's amazing. And Kentucky's been excellent and they're catching 20 something, man. Like that tells you all you need to know about how Vegas views what Georgia is right now. There's one thing I want to mention about A&M.
Yeah.
Because Billy Lucci, the guy down there that runs TechSags, A&M fan. There you go. Check him out. That's a passionate fan base. We'll put it mildly. I'm quoting here. The threat Jimbo Fisher and company pose to Nick Saban's dominance is now verified. Okay. Now.
Is it?
That's the point. I've seen teams beat Bama. It happens from time to time. Mm-hmm. You know what I haven't seen Bama do? Lose to Mississippi State on its home field. That's what happened the week before A&M verified its threat. And they lost the week before to Arkansas, A&M did. Mm-hmm. So if beating Bama means that they verified the threat, then is that what Mike Leach did? Did he verify his threat to A&M? Did Sam Pittman verify his threat to A&M? Because what you're doing when you say this is you're focusing, and I'll use the golf analogy because Jimbo said they're going to kick their ass. Saban said in golf. And so the Texas A&M site used a golf card. They had the score. It was very clever. And it said 41-38. Well done. Well, what you're doing when you say this is you're focusing on the birdie you made and ignoring the bogeys the two holes before.
Correct.
Now, I want Luch and I want A&M fans to hear me clearly. And hear us clearly. You were the better team on that field that night. And that night does show what your talent can be for a night against the team who's been the yardstick. But in order to be a threat, verify your threat to their dominance.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have any more bogeys on your card. Okay. No more losses on your home field as a significant favorite. Really no more losses at all, because Bama's probably not going to, they might, but what they have not done through the years is they've not lost in spots where they were supposed to win. You want to threaten their dominance, then you can't afford to wobble really ever. And so it just got my attention, because they were excellent in that moment. But you're choosing to do what a lot of fan bases do. Focus on the high water mark.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I used to do with my grades. Look, I got an A. What about this? What about this, Scott? Oh, that's what about that? Now I got an A.
Why is the GPA still 2?
No, it's an A. Let's talk about the A, huh? Hey, if that's your ceiling, then that's impressive. You just can't play to your floor. You didn't play to your floor really against Arkansas. You just can't afford to wobble. That's all.
And that's the problem to me here, Scott. It's not an overnight deal here. Okay. You get whipped by them last year, then you run the table and tough luck. You're on the outside looking at a playoff. This year, you got everything you wanted. CBS makes the game their primetime game of the year. And then you stumble twice before that. To me, to verify the threat, you have to win a West division. That symbolizes you're a threat, because you're playing all the same teams. And as we've seen, you mentioned a number with unranked teams that have how they've done against Saban. It's not too good. And, do you want to claim being happy about being an unranked team? You're top 5 to start the year. So to me, it's not an overnight deal here. This is a process. How will you regroup and continue on? There is no doubt in my mind that Missouri is going to be in winners on Thursday night.
and I want to be fair to Billy here, because I just read the headline from his site.
Yeah.
But and I get it. I'd be crowing too, particularly for them. Like, imagine you're an A&M fan on Saturday. You watch Texas get that lead, stumble and lose, and then you go out and you do that. I can't imagine how drunk Aggie fans were Saturday night, because you couldn't have had a better Saturday to celebrate.
And we were there for one of the great weekends ever with Manziel for the rematch, Scott. And we were out with Billy that whole weekend. And I listened to Billy do a radio hit last week, and it did not sound great. And then I talked to Cole Kubelek, who played for Jimbo Fisher, who called the Mississippi State A&M game. And he was like, I've never seen Jimbo have this disbelief in his process and his team coming in. And then it's amazing what a Saturday night in a college football stadium, one of the best in the country, can make kids do. And yeah, that's what was awesome, man.
I agree.
I will say, Bama showed me a lot to come back. Bryce is what, third start on the road? I mean, it's pretty big. I mean, at Florida and at College Station.
I mean, they have the lead. They have the lead, and then they don't. So it was a hell of a game, hell of a day. And
Nevada.
Yeah, that made bad beats. That was nuts. Shout to Nevada. They were up 52-7, laying 28.5. That didn't get there. It gets wild and weird in Reno. Looking forward, you talk about winning an SEC West. That's been the roughest side of the street to live on in college football. With LSU, they're down. And Mississippi State's had their time. Mississippi had a moment there. But we know that the West, A&M, Bama.
We know where we are. We live here now. We are in the toughest division in college football. We're living it.
We're looking forward to the games that are coming in the Big Ten East, and it's madness. It's like one weekend is Michigan, Michigan State. The next weekend is Penn State, Ohio State. It's like a round robin of top 10 teams. And the fear for that league is that they're all going to beat each themselves up. And how do you come out of, do you have anybody that comes out of it standing that's potentially playoff worthy? Iowa, on the other hand, won't play a game as an underdog until they get to Indianapolis, and if they got there, I guess they'd be a dog if they faced Ohio State. But I don't know who, I don't know what the Michigan number would be. I mean, who knows? I mean, I'm looking way down the road, but it's that Big Ten East is rugged, man, rugged.
And we got a possible chopper trip to Piscataway for Maryland Rutgers.
I want to apologize to Rutgers. I broke up with you years ago. I said, I believe I quoted Taylor Swift. I said, we're never, ever, ever getting back together. But then I quoted Peaches and Herb and said, reunited and it feels so good. And I took Rutgers plus the points against Michigan State. They might have got there.
Giving up the big plays, guys.
They might have gotten there if they didn't give up three, like, 90-yard touchdowns. Yeah. But they did. It's fine. But I apologize to you, Rutgers. That's on me for taking you guys. I won't do it again. I shot you the you up text, and I saw the dot, dot, dot. And I thought, you know, we should hang out and see how it goes. Well, that's why we're not together, Rutgers. Me and you. That's why we're not together.
I got to say something here.
Please.
It got real. I'm trying to say how. Just coming off an 0-5 week of picks and then getting home from old soccer practice and turning on the tube and seeing Rutgers down 31-13. And that was a pick I gave out. And also Oklahoma down 28-7.
How was your mental?
Not good.
Yeah.
Not good. Not good at all. So
how'd you come back? What'd you finish?
3-1.
There you go.
3-1. Just trying to get along. But it wasn't good. It was a lot of deep breaths.
Three words, Steve. Three really important words. Keep your poise. Keep your poise, Steve. Be a poise keeper. That's be unflappable. You're too good to let a bad stretch define you.
It's those noon games. They get me every time. Just want to start the day off with a winner, you know?
That's why mentally you'll pass on those sometimes just because you don't want to give one out and have it be like the first score you see is 28-7 Texas. And mentally you're already pigeonholed. You're already mentally in mental prison.
Yes.
And that's no good.
Yep.
Hockey has returned to ESPN. Hallelujah. How good is it to hear that music again? The NHL is starting back up, and that means you can stream your team's games on ESPN Plus. You can watch every team from the Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning to the brand new Seattle Kraken. Subscribe now to ESPN Plus so you don't miss a goal, and be sure to follow In the Crease, the new ESPN NHL podcast with Linda Cohn and Emily Kaplan. On Sunday, two games I want to mention.
Yep.
Chargers, Browns, I think they're both really good teams. Browns have lost twice. They could have won them both. Played well enough to win at Arrowhead. Mm-hmm. Punter dropped a ball. The punter. And then the Chargers, like, you're leading the whole way. But the Chargers are one aggressive bunch. Herbert he's made so many people look dumb that doubted him. He's not really a leader. He's not really a big personality. Oh. How's he looking now? Staley's uber aggressive. They go for it on fourth down. It helps to have a guy like Herbert and the offensive talent they've got around him. But that game, sometimes a game ends and I feel like, okay, you lost, but I know you're good. I felt that way about Cleveland. I feel like both the Chargers and the Browns are both good teams. And I wonder, I mean, I don't want to get crazy, but I wonder what do the Chargers have in Herbert? Because you're starting to see not just narrative shifts, but people are trying to like reinvent history and act like this guy's the best young quarterback in the game. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, well, Mahomes got something to say about that. So does the other quarterback for a team I want to talk about later in Buffalo. But I'm happy for Herbert because he's a quiet kid. He came out of Oregon and he kind of got dissected the way quarterbacks do. And all he's done has been great.
Yeah, I think a couple things. I look at the fearlessness of what he plays with. And what I mean by that is he gives his guys a chance. He's got enormous size in Mike Williams. He's got maybe the best route runner in the league in Keenan Allen. He's got my big man at tight end doing things and Jared Cook. He's got a run game, and he's taken advantage of that. And I just look at other guys who've come into the league and, you know, holding on to the ball too long, afraid to make that decision to give your guy a chance. Maybe you get discouraged because when you did, you threw four picks in trying to do so. So I think it's been an awesome situation for him to go in and produce. And I look at the surroundings of that team, and it feels like you could say the majority of the years compared to the others where you're like, oh, the Chargers roster looks really good. And then you get a guy who's finally healthy and Derwin James on the defensive side. Bosa, good luck trying to block that guy every day. So it is, I think, sky's the limit.
You know, another thing, they played so many close games that they lost, and that became indictments of people. And I mean, maybe Staley's the guy. Maybe it's been a culture shift. I think that's a little convenient. I think,
yeah.
They won a game against Washington week one, could have lost it easy. Okay. They won a game against Cleveland, could have lost it easy. The world looks a lot different when you manage to win those close games, and all credit to the coach, the team, the whole bit. It's wild how different the world looks when you start winning a bunch of coin flips in a row instead of losing them. You know what I'm saying?
That's the NFL, Scott.
I've said it a billion times.
That's what makes it. I mean,
coin flip league.
Look at the Lions, you know?
Oh my gosh.
Like it's just, so then you just say it's the Lions, and it's about those guys in the locker room just saying, hey, we're going to be in this situation and we're going to do it this time. And you just, it's a tiring thing, but you got to believe in what you're doing. And I honestly think the Lions do believe in what they're doing, and they will get there and get some wins here. But man, is it frustrating! And I can't imagine, because there's nothing worse than going to practice every day during a losing streak. Nothing.
Let me ask you about this as a player. Like Dan Campbell goes there and becomes social media phenomenon. He talks about biting people's knees, and he's up there talking, you know, crazy football guy talk. When a coach gets up there after you've absolutely laid it out there and come up short again and is moved to tears, what does that do to a locker room? Like how what does that tell you about your coach?
What if I'm the guy in the locker room, I see this is a guy that has lived in this league for what, close to 15, 20 years. And he knows that they're doing things the right way and they still can't get a win. And now he knows that the younger guys who don't might want to believe in there, maybe they're frustrated because of playing time. How is that going to go? How's that going to go over in the locker room with the older guys who say, guys, we're still doing the right thing. And that's, you know, that's, look at all the first year head coaches. That's what it comes down to, is how's your team going to respond? Do you have the goods? Do you have the respect of the locker room to say, you know what, guys, we're doing it right. The tape says we're doing it right. We just got to, you know, a bounce off a goalpost on a record field goal. You know, another long field goal last week. You know, it's that situation of, if you keep putting yourselves in the situation, you're doing the right thing, it'll happen. And you got to trust it. And sometimes it's an ugly process.
It's a coin flip league, but Buffalo didn't win a coin flip game. Buffalo won a kick your ass game in Arrowhead. And there's two storylines that come out of that. One is, man, the Chiefs lost two in a row and they're 2-3, and you got Mahomes, I don't know, not questioning himself, but asking out loud, like, you know, what role am I playing in this, you know, with my play? You're fine. Your defense needs to stop somebody. But for Buffalo, who lost to him twice last year, to go in there, have Josh Allen play the way he played, impact the game with his legs the way he did, make some big-time throws. Emmanuel Sanders comes up big and up a couple of touchdowns. Dawson Knox, another touchdown. I mean, they got weapons, man. Stephon Diggs hasn't really been doing much from a touchdown standpoint. Allen's making you pay with second and third options. And to me, that shows the growth of the guy. But, I mean, I asked Brian Clark, like, who do you trust the most in the AFC? And he said Buffalo. And it's just, I think for the young quarterbacks out there, and I think Salah said it with New York, where was Josh Allen five games in? And it's just a good reminder to the young guys it ain't easy. You don't hit your ground running in this league. But to see where Josh Allen is now, you're seeing the guy take more steps forward. Look at their schedule. Buffalo's, I'm not saying they won't lose. They'll lose. It's the NFL. That's what happens. Mm-hmm. But they won't have many L's between now and the playoffs. They've got a pretty clear path to try to put themselves in a great position to be at home throughout the playoffs.
No doubt. And to me, Scott, this all has to do with the team on the other side. And this feels so like the greatest show on turf in the years where they ended up getting beat by New England. And I'm not saying that there's a script now, but teams don't fear them because they know they could go into their place and kick the out of their defense. Buffalo ran the ball more than they passed. I still want to know when's the last time that happened. I can't think of it. And that's all it comes down to. And I it's a shame Elair got hurt because I think they have to go back and run the ball or at least try because the backpedaling stuff and the way these teams don't have to bring guys up for the run and they could keep them deep on the pass. I mean, I know Tyreek had the crazy game against Philadelphia, but it's pretty obvious teams are using the extra guy on him now. And it's just that's what I see when I watch these teams play now is they don't fear him.
That's interesting about the stats. Allen only threw the ball 26 times. They ran it 28. He ran it 11 times.
Yep.
One a designed run for a touchdown. But you're dead on about the fear of him. And they don't fear him because you used to fear the fact that they're in a shootout. Could you keep up? Well, now the question is, can they keep up with you? Because their defense has been such a liability early on that Buffalo left there, I have to believe, a pretty competent team. We should introduce our new guy. Rockhold left.
Yep.
Taylor Schwenk's our guy. Now, what do you go by? Because we would just call Rockhold. What do you go by?
You can go Taylor. Most of my friends call me Schwenk.
Then there you go. We don't know you well enough, but we're going to be friends because you're wearing a Terps sweatshirt. So we're going to call you Schwenk. So Schwenk's the new man in town. We have this segment we do. This is the thing I hate. You know what it is. I don't want to be negative. We got enough negative stuff. Gruden's talking like an idiot, and just everybody out there, like, you know, hopefully you reflect a little bit and say, like, how do I act? Do I act right? Do I think right? Have I grown as a human? Do I act the same way I did when I was younger? And I don't mean younger, like, I mean the young adult version of yourself. Like, have you grown? Have you thought about things? Have you elevated? I hope the answer to that's yes, but we got all this negativity in the world, Steve. I don't want to talk about something I hate. I want to talk about something I love.
Oh,
new segment. Here's what I love. I'm just trying to spread positivity. You ready? We don't need any production. I want to say what I love. I love the way Lamar Jackson competes. That dude on Monday night, after the game, Lisa Salters, she's a great question asker, asking to describe the moment, describing it. And he's got this smile on his face. And he's like, I'm just glad. I don't know. I'm just glad we won, man. And I find myself smiling. I just want to go hug him and high five him and be like, man, I love to watch how you compete. Because that guy, he came into the league. People questioned him. Oh, but people want to make him a receiver. Didn't go till late into first round and like came out as a Heisman guy. I don't know. And I get you want to hold off judgment. You want to say he's got to do it in the playoffs. Okay. Oh, that's fine. I just love the way he plays, the way his team has his back, the way they rally around him. He completed like 90% of his passes in the second half. You had John Harbaugh say it's one of the great performances he's ever seen. They had to get back-to-back touchdowns and two-point conversions. Then they go down the field, score a touchdown, and win against the Colts team, who was better for most of that game, frankly. They got nicked up on defense, couldn't hang, and the just ran out of gas. But I just love the enthusiasm for the competition. I love the level of the competition. I just love watching Lamar Jackson play quarterback for the Ravens. And I root for the other team in town. We understand this, but I sure do respect that organization, the way they play it. And I love watching Lamar Jackson compete. That's what I love.
Yeah, he's incredible. Because to me, I'm watching last night, and all I could think about is watching him just keep wanting the ball back because he screwed up. And down on the goal line, he's got to give that ball, and it's a touchdown. Like, the guy's walking in the end zone. He ends up fumbling it, and the Colts go down and score, and they haven't done anything offensively. And I can just see it in Lamar's face, like, man, I need the guys, give me the ball back. I messed this up, and I will fix it.
What did he do?
He fixed it.
That's what I'm saying.
He fixed it.
It's a combination and it's like, it feels like it's youthful exuberance, but I don't want that to be misconstrued, because I'm not like, that's a compliment. Like, to hang on to the joy we all felt at one point in our life to compete. Only this guy's doing it on the biggest stage there is, you know, Monday Night Football against the former team from Baltimore. And I just love watching a guy compete. That's all. I love that. You don't have to have something. You weren't prepared. Do you have something you hate, Steve? You want to be the yin to my yang?
I do.
Oh, good. I love watching Lamar Jackson compete. Here's what Steve hates.
The NHL is back on ESPN, Scott.
You hate that?
No. We got a new team, fired up, Seattle Kraken, unbelievable uniforms. And I hate that I can't name one player.
Well,
I can't name one player. But I will tell you this, I will memorize their roster.
You could just do a Google search, Steve.
No, I'm going to memorize it so then people can ask me and I'm going to know it. I'm not this cheating Google stuff. I'm going to memorize it.
There you go. Get on Steve's level. No cheating. Yeah. Google. Memorize.
Give me a little bit.
What?
To memorize it. I need a little time to study. You know, right. Remember, like, you used to study at Maryland?
Not often. Not often. You know how if it doesn't rain for a long, long time and then it pours, the ground, the water doesn't seep into the ground, it just kind of runs off? That was me with learning. My brain was just like a parched desert. And then in the last hours before an exam, we'd have a torrential downpour. And then it would run off.
All right.
Not a lot of retention there of knowledge. On the way out here, baseball playoffs, where are you? Woo! They've been so good.
Unreal.
How about Boston?
They really do.
It's
amazing how easy they make it look. It's so frustrating rooting for every team that sucks.
I root for Baltimore. I root for the Orioles. Are you talking to me? Houston makes its fifth straight trip to the ALCS. They'll face Boston in the American League. And the National League, as we're talking, we don't know yet the direction. San Francisco's season has been astounding to me. The fact that they were able to keep the Dodgers at bay for the entire second half. And now, again, we're talking on a night when they have an opportunity to close things out. I can't feel bad for the Dodgers. I mean, they just won one. But yeah. I would think it's a different kind of frustrating to root for a team that wins 106 games and has to win a playoff game just to have the right for a playoff series. You know, mm-hmm. I would think. I wouldn't know. My team lost 106 games.
Weird dynamic with those Dodgers and Giants fans. It's like the Giants fans are more worried about the Dodgers sometimes. Like, you won the division. You're better. Beat them. Well,
we have a Red Sox fan in our midst who called the wild card game with the Yankees, this is our World Series.
Yeah.
Well, all right. But if you win that, you get the American League East champions. Well, what's that? Well, now you beat them. Okay. Well, now what's this? I mean, I get having a rival who you're obsessed with.
He's also a guy that said last year he's taking the year off because he was so happy from the World Series the year prior. So there is that.
Wow. I don't have the luxury of taking off time. Actually,
yeah, exactly.
I just take off 5 years because my team apparently isn't interested in the competition portion of things. I don't know. Is that it?
I think that's it.
Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Did you see that thing that Bieber voiced? Bieber voiced the Biebs, as in Justin, voiced a thing a thing, a piece about the guy who composed that NHL Tonight music.
Bucci said that's his boy. They're boys.
I saw that. I don't know what that means. Like, do they hang out and compare chicken parm? Like, that pasta is a little bit too watery. The cheese melt is perfect on this, but it's like a manhole.
I do love how happy the guys are that we got it back, though. Like, Bucci tonight calling that game is going to be out of his mind. Like, he's an energy drink guy. I can't imagine how many he's had today.
Yeah, he's just going to freeze. Like, he's going to freeze a Monster Energy. He's going to chop it up and snort it. So that he's going to be mainlining Monster Energy drinks. That's another thing. I'm full of love. I love there's and to single out Bucci, Levy, Linda, Emily Kaplan, who those two are going to have a podcast.
Barry
for sure. And there's so many more, but just in terms of the names and faces that you'd be familiar with out there. Cause we get crushed. Oh, you guys don't care about hockey. That's not true.
I'm in on the hockey.
Well, will you see more on our air? Almost certainly. That's the way things work in this business. When you have the rights, it's more of a push. That's how things work. Not just here, at every place. That's how things go. So I do love the fact that when we had Commissioner Bettman on, he did basically say, it'll be nice to see our sport on your air. And I just I did the shrug emoji. Like, I mean, it's not like we embargoed the content, but no, it is. Right. It's a happy night to have that back. And I'm going away on a trip. I'm going to be gone for a little bit. We will put out a podcast next week. We'll throw that up on, I guess, Monday. Had a conversation with Alex Toussaint from Peloton. It was a fun conversation. So while I'm away, we'll have that out there. We're dropping off the grid, put our toes in some sand and some water. When I got married, I didn't even take any time off. Just went away on a weekend, got married, came back and did a show with Russillo on Monday. I figure after 10 years, you know, you probably should be allowed to just take a trip and say, hey, I don't know, you're still married to me. I look like an old shoe in the face. So I'm appreciative of that. So we'll see you. We'll see everybody on the other side. We'll have a fun conversation with Alex next week, and everybody be good until then.